Just to maybe give you an indication of our program and a few administrative matters. The first thing is today we will have two items. First, we will have the briefing by IPET on high-profile cases and an update on the Marikana investigation. Members will remember that last week we had CIRA on their high-profile cases, so we continue with all entities falling under the police committee that we get an update. So that is really the purpose of the first item. Then the second item, members will remember that there was a bit of a delay with the official tabling of the annual report of the office of the IPET judge, and we have received now a confirmation that that tabling actually took place, so we will have an interaction on the annual report. There's also been a brief document that was compiled by the researcher in terms of an overview of the DPCI judge office, and I just want to refer members to that document because there's certain important issues that we will have to interrogate the office on. Then members, just maybe in terms of next term, thank you very much for the input that we received from members. There was a request from Honorable Mthlongu with regard to the issue of gender matters within SAPS, and there was also a proposal from Honorable Kola Bana to have a continuation of the joint committee between justice and police on the NPA DPCI matter. So we will ensure that we include that. I just want to brought members also up to date to indicate that there will be changes, of course, in the parliamentary program, and we will communicate those details and the impact on our program to members in due course. But what's going to be important, our priority legislation will get preference, and we'll ensure that the necessary work is done to ensure that we deal with that. So members, that is just in terms of a few administrative matters. Members, without further ado, I'm going to ask the Executive Director of IPET, Mr. McBride, to introduce his delegation.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. On my right is Dr. Chris Mokobatiti. He's a Parliamentary Liaison Officer. On my left is the Head of National Investigations, Mr. Mathieu Sesoko. And on his left is the Head of the Special Task Team, is Mr. Innocent Kuba.
Thank you, Executive Director. Then we will ask the members. There's one or two members who are running late, but they will join us later. But let's go to Honorable Kola Bana.
Hello, it's Diane again. Diane Kola Bana, member of the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Zakhele Mbele, member of the committee.
Thank you very much, members. Without further ado, we will go over to the Executive Director for the briefing. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I will hand over to Mr. Sesoko. Can deal with all the questions when necessary. I will come in if it's needed. Thanks, sir.
Executive Director, Mr. Sopu, you're welcome.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members, and colleagues here present. Chairperson, I will proceed to present on our high-profile cases. As a way of introduction, IPED is investigating numerous high-profile cases. Below is a list of cases under investigation. It's allegation of a corrupt relationship between General Pathan and service provider, Crime Tech and Criminalistic, owned by Henry Deal and Jolanda Komolodovic. It's Gamil Drift Cars 145 of 9/27/2017. Estimated amount involved is 96 million. Allegations of corrupt relationship between General Pathan and service provider FDA, owned by Mr. Kit Keating, Sinoville Cars 146/05/2017. The estimated amount involved is 5 billion rands. And there's an investigation of defeating the ends of justice against Northwest Task Team. There's investigation of defeating the end of justice against General McKelly, and there's also allegation of corrupt relationship between Captain KGB Shabalala, General Nematinzela, and service provider to the Crime Intelligence Division, Littleton Cars 170 of 12/2015. Amount involved is 563,000. And there's also allegation of a corrupt relationship between members of Crime Intelligence and a service provider brainwave trading as iView integrated system, Brooklyn CAS 565 of 11-2017. The amount involved there is 54 million. We refer to this matter as iView 1, and there's allegation of corrupt relationship between members of crime intelligence service provider brainwave trading, iView. We refer to this one as iView 2, and the amount involved is 45 million. On the General Pathan investigation, there are two investigations here. There is a house investigation in terms of Camille Drift 145 of 1917, and there's a vehicle investigation 146 of 5-2017. During the course of investigation in Camille Drift 145 of 9-2017, which spell out the corrupt relationship between General Pathan and service provider Criminalistic, IFID was able to uncover a further corrupt relationship with another service provider, FTA, owned by Mr. Kit Kitty. The investigation has detected possible crimes of corruption, fraud, money laundering, facilitated by a car dealer, Mr. Durant's name. During the investigation of the case, it was discovered that General Patani's house, construction in 2011, there were no withdrawals from either General Fasani or his wife supporting transactions relating to the construction of the house. Seven of the construction workers who were paid in excess of 1 million rand in cash from the boot of a car by General Fasani or his driver, their version is now supported by withdrawals from criminalistic, crime tech and criminalistic amounting to 1.2 million, which appears as follows, and as we indicate those transactions there. Some of the withdrawals were made the same day the builders were paid. No records from General Patani's account that such amounts were ever withdrawn from his account. Forensic auditors are finalizing the second phase of accounts assessment for the case to be taken to court. Crime Tech and Criminalistic are owned by the same individuals who were awarded tenders valued at more than 96 million by the SAPS. IPID established a corrupt relationship between General Pathan and service provider. The following procurement irregularities were identified: non-compliance with PFMA and treasury regulations, manipulation of tender processes in favor of the said company, creating an emergency to bypass regular tender processes, oversupply of forensic items, fingerprints, powder brushes, aerosol canisters, supply of expired stock, supply of substandard products. On Pathan investigation 2, IPID was able to uncover further corrupt relationship with another service provider, FTA, owned by Kit Keating. The investigation detected possible crimes of corruption, money laundering, facilitated by a car dealer, Mr. Durant's name. General Pathan, his wife, his sister received vehicles alleged to be sponsorship by a businessman, Durant Sneyman, to the value of 883,000. He also received overstated trade in value totaling 445,991. These benefits were neither due nor declared. Kit Keating, a service provider and supplier of Rolfin lights, paid money into Durant Sneyman account through a bank of Venlo, which was used in paying for the vehicle, including one given to a Colonel Potfeder, who is based at TMS with General Patani's wife, the unit that procured the Rolfin lights. The directorate had to look into what benefit Keating derived from spending huge amounts of money for the Patani's, his wife, his sister, and other officials at TMS. IPID established the following. FTA have supplied, maintained, and supported SAPS with forensic light source for several years, more commonly known as Rolfin equipment. This without a competitive procurement process having been followed in line with the requirements of the Public Finance Management Act, Treasury Regulations, and the Constitution. CETA have, during this period, also entered into various maintenance and support contracts without following a prerequisite procurement process, extending these alleged irregular contracts by more than 800% without approval from Treasury in contravention of prescript. The total value of the contracts between FDA, SAPS, and CITA for the supply of Rolfin is yet to be comprehensively established through forensic auditors, but thus far indications are that more than $5 billion may have been spent by CITA and SAPS combined to enable FDA to secure these alleged unlawful contracts. FDA have allegedly bribed several officials, excessively entertained same, and threatened others. When we presented Chairperson at the SCOPA, the SCOPA members, in fact, already had information also with regard to the kind of entertainment in the UK where members of the SAPS were there with the service provider, Kit Kitty, and they were entertained at various venues, including at soccer matches and so forth. According to information supplied by European supplier of Rolfin equipment, LED LFS products are maintenance free. So these Rolfin lights are maintenance free as far as we could gather. However, the SAPS has got a maintenance contract on this equipment. Information at our disposal has revealed that the FDA has a current Rolfin maintenance and support contract for $583 million from December 2014 to November 2019 in CETA, and have had several prior to this totaling more than $200 million. Our investigation uncovered that a number of CETA officials and SAPS members have, after being party to these alleged irregular tenders and contract awards, been employed within various companies controlled by Kit Keating, including FDA. Some still in the employ of the state are alleged to have been offered to join Kit Keating companies on leaving the state employ. Officials within CETA have made admissions to investigators from Bowman's Gilfillan that they have received cash from current senior FDA personnel and photographs of excessive international entertainment of SAPS officials have been presented to SCOPA. With specific reference to SAPS electronic order number A00T4674 under contract number as indicated, we have established that an amount of $53 million was paid on the 31st of March 2016 for the acquisition of 146 forensic light sources, roughing lights. On February 9, 2016, a quotation was provided by FDA in the amount of $45 million. On the same day, the quotation was considered, recommended, and approved. However, an additional amount was added, according to the to our information, to include maintenance on the forensic life source. This was not included in the original quotation of the 9th of February. This contract was not advertised, and according to our information, proper bidding processes were not followed. Now, this is the contract, Chairperson, where we discovered that in one day, within 5 hours, the whole procurement process was completed by SAPS, from requesting the service to issuing an order up to the payment of this amount of $53 million was done, which is extremely extraordinary. We have since established that these products that were confirmed as have been received by SAPS at the time were in fact not received. In fact, one of the officials were sent to the service provider to check for this equipment, but the SAPS itself had not received this equipment. On Sinoville CAS 146, the Pathani investigation to General Pathani established a rogue team from Northwest led by General Mabula, assisted by the Northwest Provincial Commissioner General Mutsunyane, and former acting Divisional Commissioner of Crime Intelligence General Makele to counter IPT investigation on both investigations. Lieutenant General Pahlane, Brigadier Pahlane, General Pahlane's wife, and Durance Neyman were arrested as a result of this investigation on the 8th of February on charges of corruption, fraud, and money laundering. And the matter was remanded to the 7th of June. This was after the Special Commercial Crime Unit of the NPA decided to prosecute on these matters. The other suspect will be added in due course, that is Kit Keating and others. Asset Forfeiture Unit has been engaged in this process for launching of an application for seizure of assets. With regard to Pretoria Central CAS 5345-2017, during the investigation of allegations of corruption and money laundering against General Pahlane, the former acting National Commissioner who allegedly abuses power in conspiracy with other senior members of Northwest, including Major General Makele, the former Divisional Commissioner Crime Intelligence. They established a rogue team from Northwest Detective led by General Mabula to interfere with IPT investigation against General Pahlane under false pretense of a security breach. The counter-investigation was purportedly initiated because of a report on a security breach at Pahlane's house. False paper trail were created trying to prove existence of a security breach. Senior members who deal with security breach were neither informed nor aware of any security breach at General Pahlane's house. During the investigation of the allegation of defendants of justice against the Northwest team and General Pahlane, Major General Makele instructed a head staff officer to withhold certain information from IPT. Such an instruction not to cooperate with IPT investigation was captured on video. The investigation is completed and the docket was submitted to the Office of the DPP for perusal and decision. The DPP decided to prosecute on the 11th of January 2018. She appeared in the Pretoria Regional Court on the charges of defeating the ends of justice, alternatively contravention of Section 29 of the IPT Act in terms of Section 33, and the matter has been remanded to the 12th of April. With regard to Littleton CAS 170 of 2015, in December 2012 and January 2013, procurement of blinds and curtains were submitted and authorized respectively for safe houses used for operations. The first request was for $478,000 for a safe house at Waterkloof, which was allegedly sourced from Umvuzo Way to Promotion. The second quotation worth $84,000 for a Brooklyn safe house, which was allegedly sourced from Sibonise Construction. The actual cost for the blinds for the Waterkloof safe house was actually $63,000 and not $478,000. The actual cost for the Brooklyn safe house was $15,000 and not $84,000. The total amount claimed from the Sixth Service account funds was $563,000 for the same transaction, whereas the actual cost for the services rendered was $78,763. The amount of $563,000 was approved by General Nemo Tinzela to be paid in cash, which is against SAPS procurement policy. The official that facilitated the procurement in both cases was Captain TGP Shabalala. The directorate found the following about Captain TGP Shabalala during the investigation. Shabalala was convicted of robbery with aggravated circumstances in 1996 and sentenced to 10 years imprisonment. He joined the South African Police Services in July 2001 as an intelligence gatherer attached to crime intelligence. At the time, it did not disclose his conviction. In 2005, he was promoted to the rank of captain within CI. In 2012, he was appointed as the head of an operation named Rapid Deployment Intelligence. The operation was established to conduct intelligence work for Mangaung 23rd ANC conference, which took place in December 2012. He was provided with a budget of about 50 million. This budget was not properly accounted for, and as a result, IPID and the Office of the Inspector General of Intelligence will be conducting an investigation in this regard. In 2013, he was arrested for another robbery case which took place in Sasolburg. When his fingerprints were processed, it was discovered that Captain KGB Shabla was supposed to be serving time in prison. After his incarceration, the SAPS dismissed him on the 20th of June 2013. He acknowledged his dismissal on the 21st of June 2013. However, he remained active in the SAPS system as an employee. After serving only 2.5 years of his 10-year sentence, he was released on parole in November 2015. He applied for reenlistment in the police on the 16th of September 2016 and resigned on the 30th of September 2016 so he could be put on an agent program. Police management cannot account how this happened. I think quickly to explain this issue, Chairperson and members. When a member of the SAPS is to be put on agent program, he is removed from your normal SAPS employment database. So he does not appear there, but he will then appear on an agent program. So he's still, in effect, a member of the SAPS, however he's used as an agent. So after his re-enlistment, in 2016, he then has to resign so that he can be put on an agent program. When we confronted SAPS about this, they could not account for this anomaly because he's a convicted criminal. He has been an agent since 2016, been handled by a person who is based at IT section of CI, who is not responsible for handling agents at the instruction of Gendarme Matinzela. He was receiving a salary of between 20,000 to 30,000, a state vehicle fuel allowance of 5,000 to 8,000, and a cell phone allowance of between 1,000 and 1,500 medical allowance. The handler did not assign any project and was instructed just to keep paying Captain Chabala. So we've got a statement also from the handler indicating that there were no projects that were assigned to this individual relating to the work of crime intelligence whilst he was getting paid as an agent. The same applies to his colleague, and we've established that they happen to be very close friends. His colleague is Pope Maluleka, who even took the SAPS to court. We have seen court papers where he was suing the SAPS for not giving him work, because he alleged that this disadvantaged him in terms of a promotion in the SAPS. The current status on the Captain KGB matter, he was arrested and he's currently in custody. We opposed his bail successfully. And then he appeared again on the 23rd of March. He wanted to reapply for bail, stating that he had new facts. The matter was then postponed he applied to reapply for bail, and then after he had applied for that, in the meanwhile we had engaged the present authorities to revoke his parole, and his parole was then revoked. And then after his parole was revoked, we were informed by the prison authorities that he attempted suicide. We sent in support to the prison authorities when we were taken to hospital. And then it was discovered that, in fact, he faked the alleged suicide. Our suspicion is that it was an attempt. However, he appeared again yesterday in court, and then he could not still apply. He applied for bail, and then the court decided to remove the bail application from the court roll. So the matter will be coming again late in April. With regard to IV1, it is alleged that between the 20th December 2016 and 31st March 2017, a procurement process was initiated between Crime Intelligence Division and a company called IVU. During the course of the investigation, it was established that there were gross irregularities in the procurement process, resulting in the state suffering a loss of more than 54 million rands. The following was discovered during the investigation. The procurement was initially for a software which was aimed at the monitoring social media sites, Richer, that is the software program, during the Fees Must Fall protest. SAPS did not derive value for money for the system and paid 33 million. A deviation was done for another system, Daedalus, to secure cell phone communication between General Pahlane and the team that was established to counter IPT investigation into fraud and corruption investigation against General Pahlane. The amount paid for this system was about 21 million. The investigation in these matters is delayed because SAPS is refusing to declassify information and documents which crime intelligence has classified as top secret. The following can be noted. On the 13th November 2017, an operation was conducted by IPIC and the Office of the Inspector General of Intelligence at Crime Intelligence Offices to interview members and obtain documents. On the 14th November 2017, IPIC raided IVU office park where computers and documents were seized and statements were obtained. At a SCOPA presentation, on the 28th of February 2018, the National Commissioner undertook to declassify the relevant documents and information within 40 days and hand over to IPED. The National Commissioner has failed to honor this commitment made to SCOPA. As a result, the Minister has been engaged to intervene in this matter. On IVU 2, on the 14th of December, IPIT received a tip-off regarding a further transaction which is worth about 45 million directed to the same company, IVU. The amount was alleged to be for the payment of a grabber, which its value is between 7 and 10 million. It is also alleged that such amount of money directed at IVU system was in fact to be laundered for buying of votes at the ANC conference. The following investigation was undertaken. IPIT engaged a number of SAPS senior officials, some of whom confirmed that such transaction was being pushed at all costs, resulting in strained relationships amongst senior members. The directorate contacted the National Commissioner General Sithole and recommended that the payment be stopped with immediate effect. IPIT also obtained video footage of meetings between SAPS officials and a service provider. The investigation also in this matter has been delayed as SAPS is still refusing to classify information, and the following can be noted. Senior police officers have been summoned to appear before IPID for questioning, and as indicated earlier, at SCOPA presentation, the National Commissioner did undertake to declassify the requested documents and hand over to IPU within 14 days. This has failed to happen, and the minister has been engaged in this regard. Yes. So basically, the SAPS is refusing to give us this document. Hence, the minister has been engaged to ensure that we get this document. I think it's important for members to note that the missed document that was approved by cabinet is very clear on issues of classified document. That classification of documents cannot be used to hide criminality, maladministration, and corruption. And in these instances where we investigate matters relating to crime intelligence, classification of documents is being used to protect members and hide criminality within that environment. And it's important to note that the information that we are requesting from crime intelligence has got nothing to do with national security. We are not requesting crime intelligence to give us information regarding projects that they are doing of national security or anything of that nature. All these investigations relates to corrupt procurement processes where people basically looted money from the state. And that is why we cannot understand the reluctance of the SAPS to provide us with the documents relating to this. Included in this request is request for documents relating to the Mdluli investigation, which was initially conducted by the Hawks. So after our memorandum of understanding with the Office of the Inspector General of Intelligence, the Inspector General of Intelligence referred this matter to us and said, given that there has not been a movement on this matter, we must also look into it. We then engaged with the DPCI and General Matagat, and hence members of the DPCI were also seconded to our investigation. We also requested that information. And that also has nothing to do with national security, but issues relating to corruption, relating to a procurement of vehicles and so forth that happened in that environment. I'll move then to the Marikana investigation, Chairperson. As we have previously presented to this committee, that the Falam Commission made specific recommendations with regard to IFP's involvement in the Marikana investigation, and that IFP must be given the necessary funding to conclude this investigation. However, that has never happened despite our request from various stakeholders, including Treasury and the SAPS. So we're left with no option but to use our baseline budget and redirect some of the resources to make sure that this investigation also continued. And unfortunately, that also have an impact in our normal operations. So below is the background, is the breakdown of the investigation. There is a death which occurred on the 13th of August 2012. Investigation with regard to this death where five people died was completed and docket was forwarded to the NPA on the 24th of April 2017 for decision. Two officers and three minors were killed. One police officer and five minors were critically injured. The following murder cases were registered. We've indicated those cases. Six additional charges of attempted murder were added. That is one police officer and five minors. Minors were chased towards the nearby stream, and one minor was shot dead by a police officer across the stream. Evidence at our disposal revealed that the deaths were caused by police action, and charges are as follows. General Mbembe, four counts of murder, and we indicate who are the deceased in that in those counts. Six counts of attempted murder and contravention of the Commission Act. Colonel Vermaak, one count of murder, we indicated the deceased person, contravention of Section 2 of the Commission Act, and Warrant Officer Mohale, Warrant Officer Mkabela, Sergeant Mgunye, and Constable Sikhweleya, one count of murder, and J50 warrants were issued, and they appeared in court on the 15th of March at Rustenburg, and the matter was remanded till 18th June for pre-trial and transfer to the High Court. And then there's death that occurred on the 16th of August 2012. where 34 people died. The docket was forwarded to the NPA on the 1st of August for decision. IPID is still waiting decision with regard to this matter, including a way forward on the Scene 2 reconstruction. Members will remember from our previous presentation on this issue that one of the recommendations from the Falam Commission was that Scene 2 must be reconstructed by private experts. And that also required a substantial budget to do that. But because we could not get that, as we've indicated, we continued with investigation using our baseline budget. So the reconstruction was not done. So in our engagements with the NPA, it was then decided that NPA will then look into the investigation that we have done. And then they will make a determination based on the available evidence that we're able to obtain, whether there is still, whether they can be able to make a decision on whether to prosecute or not, based on the available evidence. And if they think that based on the available evidence that they are unable to make a decision, and therefore the need for reconstruction still obtains, then they will instruct us accordingly to find ways to do the reconstruction of Scene 2. So they are still seized with this matter. It's quite a voluminous docket. So we're still waiting for them in this regard. And then further on the Marikana, there is what we call body in the Toyota Kenta investigation. During the investigation, Marikana IP discovered a photo album depicting a deceased inside a police truck, a Kenta as they call it, that was utilized on the 16th of August 2012 to transport the arrested minors from the scene to a detention center. An IPIT file was registered and the matter was investigated further. It was discovered that indeed one minor, Mr. Van Weeks, Khaled, died inside the police truck at a detention center. However, there was no chain of custody as to how the deceased was handed from detention center up to the government mortuary. Our investigation uncovered that the same deceased was collected by a government mortuary at the Nrusafi Hospital. The investigation revealed that indeed the deceased died inside a police center at a detention center, and the SAPS failed to report the death to IPID as stipulated in Section 29 of the Act, of IPID Act. And SAPS lied to the Falam Commission that this died at hospital. There is overwhelming evidence to support that SAPS intentionally failed to disclose the information to the Commission. A case of defeating the ends of justice was registered as per Marikana Case 82 of 12, 2016, and the following were additional charges: contravention of IPID 8, that is failing to report. Four SAPS members were served with J175 or summons to appear at Rustenburg Court, and they appeared on the 15th of March, and the matter was also adjourned to the 18th of June for pre-trial and transfer to High Court. The accused in this matter is General Mbembe, Brigadier Van Zee, Brigadier Matoda, Lieutenant Colonel Opa Ule. In conclusion, Chairperson, it is our considered view that the investigation against high-ranking police officers has brought to the fore the necessity to amend the IPID Act, the Intelligence Oversight Act, which the Office of the IGAI operates with, the SAPS Act, to deal with the following: the counter-investigation of IPID investigators by members being investigated by IPID. This is clearly unconstitutional. Declassification of information and documents by CI and SAPS management to enable IPID to conduct investigation, as this unnecessarily delays IPID investigation. IPID investigation in Littleton Case 170 of 2 2015, as well as IV 1 and 2, shows that SAPS Crime Intelligence is involved in internal political battles contrary to their constitutional mandate, which may negatively affect our democratic project. There is therefore a need for legislative amendments for strict oversight of the Crime Intelligence Division, as well as the Secret Service Fund in particular. This could be benchmarked with international best practice. I think, Chairperson, is important, especially with regard to a counter-investigation. I mean, this Parliament said and enacted Act from ICD, and the intention was very clear, that it was to strengthen IPED to be able to discharge its mandate as per Section 206 of the Constitution. Now we are having a situation where, whilst we say IPED Act is giving us teeth, now we're having a situation where the SAPS and crime intelligence in particular and management are using other ways to try and not comply with legislation. But importantly is that we can't have a situation where when we investigate senior members of the SAPS, then there is this counter-investigation of IPID to enable IPID to discharge its mandate. We have now learned that our investigators who are involved in this investigation, three of IPED employees, including two investigators who are involved in this, have been approached by SAPS senior officers to basically falsely implicate the senior members of IPED so that they can assist in thwarting this investigation. They are promised senior positions within SAPS. Now you can imagine they are using the state funds to lure our investigators with promises of senior positions. I mean, our investigators at level 9 are promised level 13, for instance, to go into the SAPS so that they make statements that will implicate the executive director in particular and other senior members of this investigating team, so that they can disable us from investigating this serious allegation. That in itself, Chairperson and members, it's a crime, because it is gratification that is being made to our members by SAPS senior officials using state resources so that senior members in SAPS cannot be investigated. So that cannot be. I mean, our view is that there needs to be an intervention with regard to this issue. Because if we leave this to happen, it means we cannot investigate senior members of the SAPS. It means they can continue as normal by committing crimes within SAPS. So that is something, Chairperson, we think it really needs a serious attention. I thank you.
Sissoko, Executive Director, you've got something to add?
Just to add on the last part of Mr. Sissoko, we have evidence and we know who it is, so it's not a thumbsuck allegation. We have evidence of this approach and attempt to pervert the course of justice.
Thank you very much to the delegation of IPED for the presentation. We'll go to questions, the first few from my side, and then we'll go to Honourable Kola Barnard. Maybe the first thing I must put on record, and I think a couple of years ago, this committee requested the Executive Director and IPED to focus on systemic corruption. And we know for under-resourced institutions it's difficult. But I think today's presentation actually shows that there's very much good progress and that systemic corruption investigations can contribute to ensure that we've got a SAPS that is free of corruption and also corrupt activity. So that is so I think the portfolio committee was justified calling for that 3 years ago. So I think we note also the progress with regard to that. Now, in terms of the questions, I just want to get an indication from IPED. Traditionally, IPED's focus, or most of the cases, were generated within Program 2 of SAPS. Now we see quite significantly a change to Program 3, but I think also Program 1, in terms of the procurement issues, is also at play. So I just want to get an indication, in terms of your own assessment, percentage-wise, in terms of budget and focus. What is the percentage per program, more or less? You know, is the, most of the focus going now in the high-risk areas where procurement is at play. I just want to get an indication. And what is the implications for your core business in terms of Program 2? For instance, murder cases and other issues in terms of the IPED Act, so that we can get an indication. Then I've got a question for the Executive Director. Now, the relationship between IPED and SAPS will have ups and downs. It's a constant environment. I think when the new National Commissioner was appointed, IPED congratulated and welcomed the appointment. Now, I want to know from the IPED Executive Director today, after listening to Mr. Sisoko and seeing the struggles you have since the SCOPA meeting, what is the current relationship? Because you've indicated in your presentation you ask for the intervention of the Minister, but my view is IPED is independent. There should be compliance by SAPS with regard to your request and in terms of your legislation. You don't actually need the intervention of the executive authority. Are you doing it as a good officers? Can we just get a status report? What is the current status with regard to that? Then in terms of your investigations, of course you will still report back to SCOPA, but what is your assessment of the bid and procurement process as well as the general state of checks and balances within the SAPS environment, and what is the view of the Auditor General? Because this committee will in mid-June ask SAPS to come here, the Auditor General, Treasury, and will also invite IPED, because our concern is after our observations of the SCOPA hearing is that there is a serious problem with the bid and procurement process within SAPS, and it's the duty of the AG to pick it up and to report. And the problem is many of these matters is from a number of years back. So what is IPED's assessment? Honourable Colonel Barnard.
Thank you, Chair. In terms of the Pakhlane case, the 96 million, the 5 billion, the crime intelligence tenders, 54 and 45 million respectively, how is it that this was not dealt with years and years and years ago? I'd like to know the date you, as an entity, began your investigation. And the reason I want to know was that in August 2015, I was speaking regularly to a whistleblower. And he had reported the Pakhlane matter to the then Deputy National Commissioner, wait for it, General Sithole. He'd reported it 2 years previously. That's in 2013. He'd already reported there was a problem. And he said the Deputy National Commissioner, now our National Commissioner, did absolutely nothing. He could, of course, have addressed this matter then, but it involved his boss. Thereafter, he says he reported it to the National Commissioner, and it all just under the carpet round disappeared. Now, the Divisional Commissioner for Forensic Services should have been, at that stage, should have been suspended way back. An investigation should have been done. He was the custodian of documents relating to the 55 million rands worth of chemicals. Instead, he was made the National Police Commissioner. This is how deep and dirty this issue goes. So it's gone on forever, involving crime tech laboratories, criminalistic, that Yolanta Komodolovich and John Deal, and then she quickly steps away and puts her little daughter in. You know the situation. It has been catastrophic, but I want to know why you started investigating when you did and how long you think it had been going on before then, and I want to know about the whistleblowers, the one I was chatting to, there were several others. Oh, my heavens. You know, whistleblowers in the SAPs are suspended without pay. They are, criminal charges are laid. Everything to destroy them is done to them when they blow the whistle. And it's a common practice in the SAPs. I've watched it happen over a decade or more. So I want to know what the situation is with the various whistleblowers. And let's move on to KGB. I did ask the new National Police Commissioner questions about whether or not he was employed. And we were told categorically by HR he had been fired in 2013. But then it kind of crept in the back door that actually, well, he wasn't really fired. He was kind of fired, and then he was in jail, and then he was back, and then he was in again, but he wasn't really paid. But actually, we find out he was paid, which is what I've been told in the first place. So we had the whole song and dance all the way around, a big smoke screen that was a lot of baloney. So what I'd like to know is, who is protecting this person? There's got to be somebody in the SAPs, and I want to know if your investigation has dug that person out. Who is responsible, and who has been paying him the salary? Somebody must have given the order to put him on a system to pay the salary, and I'd like to know that person's name, because I also want to know if any attempt has been made, either by yourselves or SAPs, to recover the fraudulently paid salary to this multiple criminal. And in terms of the Farlam Commission, who decided that you should not be given extra funds to do the work you've had to do? It's a bizarre decision. I don't recall that far back who took the decision, but I think it was a very short-sighted decision to give you a massive amount of work and zero funds to handle it. And is Ria Piecha yet to be arrested? She was absolutely revealed in the Farlam Commission. Many accusations were made, many conclusions drawn, and I don't see her name down here on your list. Or is she going to be just left by you to go all free and clear and do, I gather, police work elsewhere? And finally, I agree. It is an absolute crime that your senior investigators are trying to be pulled away from you, undermined, paid off, bought by the SAPs. You are an entity that looks over the SAPs and SAPs criminality. They will do anything in their power to destroy you. We know what happened when you lot were suspended on these ridiculous charges. They moved in guys from the SAPs, not civilians, into a civilian unit. They moved SAPs members in, and they proceeded to shred, disembowel, and destroy the IPED. And it's going to take you a couple of years, I'm guessing, a couple more years, for you to recover and get back to what you should be. So, again, what are you doing about it? Who are you reporting it to, and is there any point at all in you reporting it either to the police commissioner or the minister, because they always are going to side with the SAPs. And frankly, that's why you never get enough money, is because they don't want you to exist. They never have wanted you to exist. They didn't want the ICD to exist when Francois ran it, and they certainly don't want you to exist.
Well, member, Honourable Bailey.
Thanks very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the IPED team for the presentation. I wish I could say I was surprised and shocked by the allegations against the SAPs, but I think what we've come to know about the extent of dysfunction and deficiency in ethics over successive regimes at the top of the SAPs means that we know how chronic and systemic the problems are. I think at the outset, the first point and request I would like to make, Chairperson, linked to your opening remarks about the outlook for the committee program next term, is if we could, as a matter of top priority, ensure that the committee has a hearing with SAPS top management for them to respond to an account for each point and each allegation in the IPED presentation, in particular around matters like the irregular classification of documents, the stalling, the stonewalling of IPED's work. I think it's key to our oversight mandates. Those questions have to be put directly and pointedly to SAPS top management, and they must answer and account for that. So I'd like to place that request front and centre for the Commission's agenda next term from mid-April. On to my first question, look, I mean, when it comes to the cases relating to Cramtech, criminalistic, and FDA in particular, there's no doubt that what we're seeing is another example of state capture. It's state capture by a different shade and in a different environment. We all tended to get sucked into how it happened in the public enterprises arena. But I think anywhere there's big pots of money to be dispersed through state contracts, state procurement processes, you're going to get some greedy fingers trying to get their hands in there unlawfully. But what does surprise me and stands out for me is how all of this seems to have gone undetected by the Auditor General, if you consider that the figures of irregular, unauthorized, and wasteful expenditure for the SAFs over the years have tended to be very, very low. I mean, I remember in the one financial year, irregular expenditure was less than 50,000 Rand for that financial year. So my question, my first question is how does this go undetected? How does this not get picked up? Is it a matter of the fact that, I suppose, given the size of SAP's budgets, the sample size of documents that the AG looks at when they do their audits is going to be way outside of where the actual mess is? And if so, I think there's something to be said for the Commission making recommendations that the AG has a different and customized approach to the audits they do on the SAPs. Because, yeah, I know that with the audits of the AG, they're at most looking at, I don't know, 3 to 5% of the entire documentation in the whole organization. So it's very easy to miss where the issues are. Or is it a matter of the fact that in the SAP's SCM environments, the people who are doing the fiddling are so clever that they can be technically compliant in doing the deviations, in you know, doing all that sort of treasury regulation contravention. So on paper, at face value, it looks compliant, but it's only when you start doing the substantive digging that IPED is doing that you actually connect the dots. What's actually going on there? Because if our compliance monitoring and detection mechanisms such as the IPED are not picking up on this, then it's a big problem, because we know that the financial controls in the SAPs are definitely not sufficient. Secondly, on the issue of Captain Chabalala, a.k.a. KGB, I'm just curious to know how it came to be that he did not serve his 10-year sentence since the 96 conviction if he was employed in 2001. I mean, that's the first point at which something started going wrong leading up to where we are now. Because it sounds like, and Honourable Caller Barnard hinted at this in her question, it sounds like he's part of some kind of embedded network that spans the SAPs, correctional services, possibly other parts of the criminal justice system, where, you know, it's people who look out for each other, close ranks, cover for each other. Could that be the likely explanation? And are you seeing that picture starting to emerge? Are we looking at that kind of scenario? Because then we're looking at effectively state capture coming on two fronts. There's state capture for financial interests, fiddling with procurements and state contracts, and then state capture for abusing those powers of public office, which has big implications for the state of our democracy and rule of law. Third and second last chairperson is on this issue of document that SAFs is not availing to you. What is the recourse at your disposal to obtain those, we'll call them irregularly classified documents, and ideally, in fact, to get that classification overturned? Because if there's been a misapplication of law and regulation to protect unethical or unlawful deeds, then we need the classification overturned as the big solution. But in the meantime, a recourse to actually obtain them in order to finalize the investigation. So what's the recourse at your disposal? Is it a matter of going to, the Joint Standing Committee on Intelligence? Is it a matter of the minister? You know, what's the roadmap for the way forward, and can this committee assist in any way? I certainly know that's a question I'd be keen to ask the National Commissioner and the Divisional Commissioners that are relevant. And may I also ask, Chair, of IPED, if they could please forward to the committee members that cabinet document you made reference to that makes explicit the conditions under which classification is lawful and unlawful, because I think we need that as a reference point in going forward on this. And then finally, apart from what is essentially bribery of IPED investigators, and that's a criminal investigation of its own to be pursued. I understand from the ED they've got the evidence to move forward on that. So trying to lure IPED investigators into the SAPS and therefore neuter and weaken the IPED. Have there also been any cases of intimidations and threats against IPED investigators? You've already explained the big intimidation projects of the Mabula counter-investigation team. But just if you could unpack if there have been any individual instances of threats, intimidation against investigators and what that entails and what the counter response will be to that, both to ensure their safety and to ensure accountability for those acts. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Bailey, Honourable Ramatlakhani.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and thanks to the IPED presentation. Just also a few questions that I have and some comments. Maybe let me just first start with the comments. I think it's quite an important and frank report about corruption, which the committee will always support that we root out corruption wherever it exists. So the issue that you are raising here, where you started, I remember the last engagement with General Patlani. We did ask him fairly straight questions about the allegations of the allegation of the money, the allegation of the contractor, the allegation that the money was in the boot of the car. We did ask him directly those questions. I remember I asked him specifically those questions. He denied that there was something like that. So what we are now reporting begin to bring a particular perspective, which goes back to the question that we've asked. So I think you should continue with that. The allegations are fairly serious. I think IPED should do what they have to do in terms of making sure that they root corruption. My concern, the last time we had a discussion with IPED and SEPS in the another room, I think it was somewhere down the passage. It was an old assembly. We ended up that discussion fairly with an unpleasant discussion. And one of the allegations that was leveled against IPED, by perhaps as a response or counter, was this issue about Paul Sullivan, that this seems to be the complainant, but also one who assists the IPED. While we're talking to you, I think we also need to know from you whether it was true or not true, or was a perception or not, whether you have been able to shake that off from IPED, from the work that IPED does, so that it's clear that it's not influenced by any other who are not necessarily supposed to be the influencer in the work that IPED does. So I think that we will not give us some assurance on that issue. Then Chair, there is this whole thing about the tender and the money and the things that I think, simple put, I mean, those people, I think, that have committed that kind of crime should be prosecuted for their action. But you see, for me, what's worrying me is what is not said. Those that have acted, they've acted on instruction of someone. Now, who is someone that is given the instruction? For an example, in terms of the police is a paramilitary structure. Doesn't people who act on instructions? There are no officials lower down will act and do something if has not been instructed by seniors. Now, if you're looking at these financial years that we are talking about, and the financial years that we've been, you remember we had a problem, Chair, as a committee about the dual role of someone who becomes the accounting officer, who becomes the CFO, and also becomes an operator in terms of the SEP management during the period of Commissioner Pierre. You'd remember that we had lots of problems about, including the threat that we're not going to approve the budget if the CFO is not appointed and the roles, and we are disintegrating this dual and consolidated function. So when you talk about all of these and when they all happened, there were senior officers at the top who were responsible with ensuring that they signed the check in terms of those tenders. I don't hear their name mentioned here. I don't hear, maybe you say it's still undercover or something that you're still doing. And I don't want to make allegation here and do the work for you. I think you would have to do that kind of work, because and it's not only this. You may just be scratching the surface in terms of skillful way of corrupt practices, because there's a lot of budget, there's a lot of money there, so there's a lot of fat in it. So go on dealing with that, those kind of issues. KGB, I think lots have been said about KBG stuff. But, you know, for someone to be convicted and then go out on parole and get recommended to be employed, it can't happen without recommendation. It can't happen without a signature. So it means that there must have been authoritative recommendation that has taken place, that this man is well-mannered, is behaving well, and so we recommend it. There may be those that officers that are parole, that are monitoring the parolees, but are acting and they are going to write a report that is favorable. What action is it taking on those individuals? Because this is a simple corruption. You can't have that kind of thing. So who recommended this, that he should be reappointed in SEPs while he was a saving parolee? He's in the safe. So I think lots has to be looked at in terms of that. And I mean, let me... The reinstatement, the reenlistment story is just so murky, that issue. Chair, let me come to this this grabber story and the whole lot of allegations about the 2017. I mean, I'm hearing this grabber story, and I'm wondering, the ANC conference did not need a grabber, did not need a 7 to 10 million expenditure of a grabber. What would a grabber do with delegates, 4,000 delegates? I mean, what's the work of the grabber? I mean, so the conference would not go and ask anybody to buy a grabber for the conference. There's absolutely no business of a grabber in a democratic conference of the ANC. 44,000 delegates in a conference. What will a grabber do? And who motivate to buy a grabber for this? I think this is something. Maybe going forward, in engaging with this thing, some people have to explain certain things about this, because this was simply a smokescreen. You can't. It's no way that you can use a grabber for the conference of the ANC, and I mean ANC can never sanction that for his conference to happen. Somebody should go and purchase a grabber. So I just want to just say that, Chair, that anything that has been committed there is a misconduct. In fact, it's a looting. It's a serious looting in the name of the ANC conference. There's 10 million, there's 50 million. I think the others, you said that the Inspector General is busy investigating about, you mentioned 50 million, 25, also allegation that it was vote buying type of things. I mean, how would you, this is quite a mind-boggling story that we're listening here today. But I think going forward, we need to engage with this kind of thing. I mean, why would the ANC want to buy votes and somebody buy votes on behalf of the ANC in a conference of the ANC, where there are delegates that are delegated from their branches to go and vote for delegates in which, where will they, what 50 million, what do they want 50 million for? It's a serious stuff, actually, that requires serious in-depth engagement with them. Okay, let me come to the issue about the classification and declassification of documentation. I don't know the deeper engagement with it. But at a general statement, it may present to all of us and everybody a challenge of a blanket approach to this. Now, I'm wondering on this issue because if there is a watertight investigation, you can apply to review the document in strong room, where they are classified, where they are being put in, without necessarily asking for what one may call general declassification of classified information. But you can have it. All of you have at least been vetted. You have a top secret. If you are dealing with this issue, you can go into the strong room. You can be allowed. You can take an application for viewing of those classified documents in order for a statement to be made. Have you done that? Have you asked for the SEPs to access to that? Not necessarily asking legislative way to go and declassify document. It will take another its own time to do it. But for your access in terms of it, if the case is made on that particular issue, for viewing of those kind of document, you should be able to make a case for it, including a case if you were to go to the presiding officer in a serious court and viewing of documents that are classified in that particular way without necessarily taking them out and throw them into the public. Because when you talk about declassification, you may be talking about public documents. It become public immediately. But for purpose of your investigation, there should be an access to something like that. But has that happened? Has that, maybe the minister being engaged, maybe it's a different minister now, about that kind of access, because I think that access could be allowed to happen. Quickly, Chair, the second last issue for me is the Marikana matter. I just want to find out, Chair, we discussed this issue about, it's shocking, to say the least, that you are asked to submit the investigated document to NPA, and then NPA will decide whether they need you to continue with the Scene 2 reconstruction, haven't applied their mind or haven't reviewed the document. That has never been a condition like that from Farnham Commission. Farnham Commission recommendations have been clear, were accepted by Cabinet, were approved by Cabinet, and you told us was the $5 million that you needed. Or was it $15 million? But the figure I remember, unless my memory is basically leaving me, was $5 million. We even said for SEPs, I mean, there's $33 million here that has just been given to someone, $54 million that has been given to someone. $5 million. That's what we said. $5 million cannot be fined. I remember even the commissioner that was still there, General Gary Cruiser, said administratively, we can't find this money. We can't find the $5 million for this investigation as we seem to be implemented. Today we're still hearing the story that you are now submitting, you have not done it. Who is refusing? And why are they refusing that you should go ahead and construct someone, employ or contract in someone to reconstruct the Scene 2? Who is blocking it? And what is the reason they're blocking it? Is this a simple thing about the commissioner? Is it the National Treasury? Is it the minister? I mean, we have at least the secretariat in the room. Now, can the secretariat not bid for getting $5 million for this particular work to happen? They're sitting at this in a room. Or can we come back to this question? Because I'm worried about this, what I'm listening to. Submit. And NPA is known of sitting on document for months and months and months without decision. You've just given us the information that the 34 miners that were killed, the document was submitted. There's no decision. I wanted you to listen to this because I think you need to give us an answer. 34 minus the NPA decision is outstanding. Have they told you that they need more information for them to be able to make a decision? Or they are simply sitting with a completed document that requires Mr. Sean Abrams to make a decision? This is in August last year. This is now almost like it's already April. The docket, have they told you why they are not making the decision in that particular docket? Or is it more or less the same thing that we've heard, we just still have to come back with the Hawks? The cases of Hawks documents sit there and nobody makes decision about. Because I think it's going to be important for that. So, Chess, the last thing for me is this, the cases against some of the police, some are outstanding. You would remember that there was a discussion that we had before, that in the DC or all the internal investigation of SAPS, everybody that were part of what happened in Marikana were not found guilty. In fact, we were all given, not even anyone, nobody could be found they have committed any wrongdoing. Now, and there were a number of them. In your investigation, are there others that are not necessarily yet on your list of people to be, or is it some total of people that needed to be prosecuted for their decision? Because I don't see other names here. I don't see the people that were in the in the meeting of that morning of the 16th, where the decision of disarming or else disarm at all costs. So there are a number of other key people that are not there. Are they part of the investigation or not investigation? Or these are the people that were really the key to your to the case itself. Chair, I know that we don't have a lot of time today. Let me end by saying that in all of these, the SEP's counter strategy against IPED investigation, that we need to have a further engagement with SEPs. I mean, that if they continue with that kind of rogue unit, something must be done. And of course, the authority, which is the minister, must also be brought on board in terms of action on that, because that is simply defeating of the ends of justice. And if that's the case, then the equally must be prosecuted, people that are doing that kind of things. It simply cannot be allowed to condone. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Ramatlakane, Honourable Marke. Thank you very much, members. Executive Director, over to you and your team for the responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. On a lighter note, we were expecting a less heavy session today. Bearing in mind it's almost Easter, and we remember our good Lord and what he had to go through over 2,000 years ago. And we were hoping that in the interest of the spirit of this period, we'd be, do a quick presentation and leave, and we'll be all happy with it. So I think the questions honourable members have been asking are key and critical questions, because it's some of the questions we ask in our work which leads us to investigate further and leads us to conclusion and uncovering of evidence. But let me start with the difficult part first. The difficult part is simply this, and it must be said because it's out there, but no one is saying it. You have advisor of the minister, Mr. Mbindwane, involved in procurement procedures of IVU on a series of meetings.
The previous minister.
Yes. Why is he there? Involved in procurement procedures. Procurement procedures about what, Honorable Ramatlakane? About grabbers. An advisor to a minister. Not one meeting, but at least four meetings. That's the evidence before us. It's there. So our view is, maybe someone will ask the question. Maybe those in power will say something about it. It's been ignored. So we've just carried on. And one of the questions we ask is, maybe IPED is wrong. Maybe someone's influencing us. So maybe, guys, just explain to us, what were those series of meetings about? Maybe you have an innocent explanation. So in addition to people without clearance, security clearances, classifying documents, they refused to even explain to us what the meeting was about. Now, the questions you asked, what you'd need a grabber for a conference, we have in somebody's handwriting, it's very senior police officer, the so-called reasons, the contrived reasons why. And it sounds like a ground coverage report, the one that Mdluli and his crew wrote. That's just gobbledygook, suck it out your thumb. And that's it, and then therefore we buy. Which is the same thing that happened in December 2016, the same thing that happened on the last day of the financial year, March 2016, where in 5 hours you get a quotation, a request, an invoice, and payment of 54 million, 10 o'clock in the evening, just before the clock strikes to the new financial year. No one is really asking anything about that madness. That's pure madness. Why couldn't you wait 24 hours? Or 24 days for procurement? Why would you do it on the last day? So those are the questions. Honorable Chairperson spoke about the different programs and the involvement. Now, let me be quite clear. The fact that Honorable Kola Barnett has a whistleblower, and the fact that we have whistleblowers and informers is an indication that there are good policemen who don't like what is going on. Let's be clear about that. So they give us information, they collaborate with us. Everyone, even from the Pandey case is still not prosecuted yet. People got punished for the Pandey case. We had General Boyson, and a few other people who were involved in the case got suspended. No one asked the questions. General Pieja went out of her way to cover up. We had to go to court to force her to comply. And when she complied, she gave us documentation which was minus key elements of, in particular, the Boyson disciplinary recordings. Honorable Kola Barnett, we then got suspended, fired because of all of this. They do this to people within SAPS. SAPS functions at the highest level, in few exceptions, as a matrix of corruption. That's how it is. The biggest threat to national security, Honorable Ramatlakana, is the corruption within the SAPS. And I'll tell you why I say so. Because we are unable to contain serious and violent crime. To have any organization that does investigations, you require a good intelligence service. Anywhere in the world, you require a good intelligence service. Now, if you have a defective intelligence service, incompetent, and on top of all of that, highly corrupt, it exists to create crime. That's what you have. Then it means we are unable to detect crime successfully and bring people to court or to prevent it, because people are busy, preoccupied with stealing. Now, thievery by any other name is thievery. Whether you say it's circumvention of the PFMA and all of this, it's thievery, it's stealing. Mm. And that's what they do, they steal. So that's the biggest threat, because we're no longer able to effectively contain serious crime and corruption. That's clear. Let's go to the lighter side again. So the information Mr. Sisoko came with this morning, that there have been attempts to bribe our investigators and make them make incriminating statements against us, is part of a decision taken from senior members of SAPS, also those in CI, to have a go at us because of the iView grabber case where the former minister's advisor was involved in. It's because of that they're having a go at us. And, Honorable Ramatlakana, we expected today the story of O'Sullivan to come up again, because guess what? What did those people, the bribees, have to do? They had to say that amongst us, we instructed them that they have to work with Paul O'Sullivan. Now we're talking about the last 3 weeks. It's been running from November, but the last 3 weeks has been lots of activity. And so it's not completely unexpected, even though it's a story that's been dealt with a few times. And that would amount in their little brains to racketeering. And that's the plan that's to come up, which originated from where the racketeering? Northwest Rogue Unit. That's where it comes from. It's the same story again. We also know now that there are prosecutors involved in getting this up. Now, we don't have a Section 9D unit which deals with information gathering, or if you really want to talk, it should be an intelligence unit. We don't have that. All of us double up after work and go meet people and do our information gathering. We don't have that. The real issue is that the people who give us information are good police officers. They give us the information. Without fail, those who provide information get victimized. That's the issue. Now, we have people who don't have security clearance classifying documents. It makes a mockery. The fact that they've taken a decision not to comply, not to cooperate with us, to resist, it's part of an old culture coming from what we call behind the blue curtain. Police officers do not want to be investigated. They're the oldest organization, if you take the little the parts that make up the components over the years, the last 100 years. It's the oldest organization in the country, policing. Whether you take it from the Transvaal Republic, ZARPS, or Durban City Police, and as they amalgamated over the years, it's an old tradition. It doesn't change easy. It doesn't like being investigated. Cops are the man. No one touches them. No one investigates them. They do what they want. And that sense of impunity, which found a lot of life and oxygen under Mdluli time, is still being perpetuated. Now, everybody owes everybody something. So the difficulty is the moment you started one investigation, and our view was let's deal with what we have now. Let's deal with stuff from 2012 that IPED is being investigated. Let's deal with it. We're not worried about the ancient history. Maybe that will be dealt with in state capture or whatever. But we're dealing with what we have, what's before us. And Honorable Kola Bonnet asked, when did we start investigating? Well, we really started investigating when we came back from what we lightheartedly refer to as exile. 19th of October 2016, that's when we started investigating. When we were brought before the portfolio committee to answer allegations from our suspects, Honorable Rawat Lakana, our suspects, Patlani and his crew were our suspects. When the first allegation of Paul O'Sullivan came up, those were our suspects. Our suspects, first time in the history of South Africa, suspects in corruption cases had a chance to belittle, humiliate, and undermine an investigation in Parliament. It's the first time that's ever happened in the country. And the questions you ask Honorable Ramat Lakama is accurate. Patlani lied in front of this committee. He lied about security breach. There's no security breach. Even ask General Sithole now, find a paper that showed security breach. There is none. It doesn't exist. They made it up. And he said it in front of everybody. We find initially, before we returned, the case after Paul O'Sullivan complained to Khamanyane, the case was given to Ekhomo, who was a former crime intelligence person, in my absence was appointed into IPED, together with a few others. A lot of them came in. Ekhomo was given this case. Ekhomo and another investigator, Dan Moremo, they went to some of the people, including the whistleblower referred to by Honorable Kola Bonnet, to persuade them that there is no evidence in this case. So that is February or March 2016. Come October when we return, we get another complaint from O'Sullivan. Where's the case? We ask, where's the case? Sesoko deals with Kobo. Nothing has been done. We set up a task team. We start investigating, checking over everything again. Same Homo resigns, goes. He's in all the periods that he was supposed to have been investigating the case as per Paul O'Sullivan complaining, he was in phone communication with Patlani directly. Of course, after investigation, we find this out. It's the same Homo who is approaching my investigators and offering them things. It's the same Homo who was sitting with the Northwest Rogue Team and Patlani on the left-hand side of the house on that day when our suspects were having a go at us. I'm giving the overall view of what is happening. It's impunity. This is what they think of Parliament, which is a body representative of the people of this country, what they think of our constitution, and what do they think of IPED. On the issue of funding, which involves Marikana and so on, one way of denying us the capacity to deliver on our mandate is to underfund us. That's one of the ways. How to sabotage the cleaning up of the police is to underfund us. But it backfired. How did it backfire? Is we looked at high value targets. Low volumes, high value, high impact. And we took resources and deployed the resources into the systemic corruption as per instruction. And this is the result that comes. This is the pushback that comes. We spoke about threats. My investigators have been threatened, bribed, charged, charges withdrawn. We got arrested, the three of us also, on the rendition matter. I know, Honorable Ramatrikam, I know about time, but it's fine. It's but
just a moment, if follow up on a response.
Response, not a follow up. On this Paul Sullivan question, I ask. I am expecting to get an answer, but what the ED is implying, he start off by talking about the 3 weeks ago there's been this about Paul Sullivan, and we expected the question here. Now, I don't know what that implies, whether that implies that me who asked the question somehow has been in this cahoots the last 3 weeks about the Paul Sullivan issue until it gets here. Some insinuation that he's making, which is find it unfortunate, because it seems to suggest that Paul Sullivan is no go, questions should not be asked about him. And my question was simple. Have you shaken off this perception that Paul Sullivan was having the foot inside in helping IPED? And I had nothing to do with the 3 weeks engagement or whatever happened. So your duty is to say no. Paul Sullivan has not been that, and not to make all the insinuation you're making, because the insinuation suggests something else. And that's all I was looking at you that you're going to get to that answer instead of making that, because that sounds like a political response to me. So all I was asking and I was expecting to get is not to insinuate it back that somehow these cahoots that's going around, I'm somehow part of it. That's why I'm asking the question. In other words, I'm speaking for someone I don't know. And the answer for me, no, I speak for myself here and I'm asking those questions straight. So that's why I was looking and getting frustrated when these questions continue, because I want to hear that answer, not the situation back.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Edie, you can continue. Thank you.
Yes. To answer that, the narrative which goes out there originated from Patlani. Patlani and crew and Khomo are still wanting to link O'Sullivan to us, even though the whole world knows, and this PCP knows, the vehicles case for which Patlani appeared in court is charged. It's not little IPED, it's the mighty NPA have decided he's got a case to answer for. There is no O'Sullivan in that case. He's not the complainant. That is IPED's hard work that uncovered it. The Namibian connection is IPED's hard work. Of course, we've been assisted very well by the GPCI. But that narrative of the O'Sullivan one, if it's doing the rounds again, it was doing the rounds before 16th of May 2017, when we appeared before our suspects, who were telling us that we have been controlled. And I've made this point, it's not anything. If there is a person on this earth who tells you he controls me, or there's a person on this earth that tells you they can manipulate me, or who I ingratiate myself to, Honorable Ramatlakhan, I'll show you a liar. That's what I will do, I'll show you a liar. There is nobody that can do that. So I don't want to appear to be defensive, but I'm saying, like you were getting, I think the word you used was irritated when I had not answered yet, as I was building up. I've got all my notes written here, what I must answer. Similarly, when it keeps coming up without any basis in truth or fact, it is also irritating. And when my guys' lives are at risk, and they go out, and they've been threatened, and they've been undermined, and the statements been fabricated against them, then it becomes more irritating, because we have not had engagements for months with O'Sullivan. And then what they do, it's the same narrative. So it will come out again, because when they interview us, they ask, so was AfriForum also at your offices? Was the DA? And then they parade a picture of O'Sullivan and the president of the country after they've completed police reservist training post-94. And make insinuations out of that. It's the same crew, because we've been monitoring them, wherever they are. They've written another document called, it's a ground coverage document, to come to the force room, called the Ginger Group. What is nice about the Ginger Group, every corruption case has been investigated. Those people are the victims. And all the perpetrators against them, targeting them, are those who've been investigating them over the years. So in a funny way, they identify themselves. So I'm saying it's been propagated, like we've seen ground coverage, browse mold, and a whole range of other documents. It's just thumbsuck. Amateurish fabrications. We need to deal with reality and fact in the country. It's a lot of false narratives that bring us to where we are, where we're in a dire situation. And that's why I'm saying we were not intending to come and give this long answer I've given and the details that the SOCO has prepared now yet to give in response to specific questions. But that the time has come where we must just speak the truth as it is. Someone should ask me, I'm hoping, do I know what Mbindwane was doing there in a procurement process for a grabber, an advisor to a minister? Someone needs to ask that question. If it's not asked, the question is not asked. And you can't come ask me about Paul O'Sullivan. We've dealt with Paul O'Sullivan. We don't engage with him because that case is done. The cases with the NPA, we are directed by the NPA, the Serious Commercial Crimes Unit. TPCI assists us. That's how we respond. And we purposefully invited them in. We purposefully taken Mr. Kuba from Limpopo to oversee the investigations. I have moved out of investigations and deal with administration. So any element, any allegation, assertion of us not being independent, and it's less vehement now, questioning our independence, is without any basis whatsoever. We put in place, as we were advised by the chairperson, put in place mechanism so that allegation cannot come up again. We've done that. And we've invited other stakeholders like DPCI, Serious Commercial Crimes Unit, and other members of the NPA, like the Asset Forfeiture Unit. And they are running into investigation and guiding us. Where we lack expertise on complex corruption. But you are dealing here with a SAPS that, in spite of the good work of really good cops, commitment, they are people who are committed to stealing, looting, and crime. And that's where the focus should be. Thank you, Honorable Chief.
It's just the issue, the relationship with SAPS and the National Commissioner, the fact of the documents, what is the issue there?
Thank you, Honorable Chief. I think that is key. Sorry, I forgot it, you know, these issues. We are of the view of my senior management. When a new person is appointed in a sister department who is a partner, you know, we anticipate in the fight against corruption. We do the professional thing and welcome people in and say we are happy they come. Today there will be some more appointments. We will do the same. The confidence we expressed in General Sithole has eroded tremendously since, by refusals to cooperate with our investigation, not even to answer questions, to obfuscate the issue of classification about documents got nothing to do with sources, Everybody knew that there was a conference going to take place during December 2017. People knew from a year ago. Why was it necessary on the eve of the conference to start procuring money, which was five times the amount of what was purported to be envisaged to be bought? And those questions can only be answered if we interview people. Maybe there's an innocent explanation. Maybe we just paranoid and over suspicious. But they should give us an explanation. No, you've got it all wrong. We were discussing X, Y, and Z. And lastly, on the money issue, why it's so difficult, honorable members, why it's so difficult? That 500 million of COVID funds that's used every year, it buys a lot of patronage. People can afford great generosity. Lots of money is spread out. It's worse than an ATM. It's a big ATM of 500 million, but there's no necessary proper procedures. People just dip their money in and take 1 million, 2 million, 450,000, 54 million. And the purpose for which that fund is intended is completely lost. So if you knew you needed procurement, now they say they procure in a grabber. The section that deals with it was not even contacted. The section, the tactical support unit, was not even contacted. That's where the fault is. So the point Mr. Sisoko was making about legislative changes or regulatory changes for greater oversight over that fund is necessary. I don't know what's happening at the civilian intelligence. For us at police, if that COVID fund is not managed with greater oversight, this problem will perpetuate itself. It's now 15 years been non-stop looting. We don't know before that, because we were not victims before that. But from 15 years ago, I've constantly been a victim of that fund. So for me, it's not personal, it's professional, it's in the interest of the country that we need to have stricter oversight on that. And we're not asking about who the informers are, how you spend, did you get value for money on that fund, how long you're going to run it before you're going to shut it down, did you do what you said you're going to do with that fund, was the results, can we link? If you look at the 16-17 annual report of SAPS, I think under crime intelligence, I think we were looking at it the other day with Mr. Sisoko. I think it's their success is like 10 firearms recovered. That's an insult to intelligence. Some bags of dhaka and so on. But it's a strategic area. It needs to be used strategically. So that's all I can say at this stage.
Thank you, Edie. Mr. Soku, you're welcome to go to the other responses. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and all members. The Chairperson asked, what is our general view of the procurement process in SAPS? Currently, with the investigations we seized with, and we have since met with the National Commissioner to say we need to review contracts, especially those that were given to FTA. Now, it's a number of contracts. I remember when we were presenting a scope and we flagged this issue of an estimated amount of 5 billion. General Skete, when asked by scope, I said, no, it cannot be 5 billion that was received by FTA. The information we have is it's only 400 million. When one of the generals said one of the contracts was actually worth over a billion. Now, you see, we need to have context when you look at this. FTA is a company that has subsidiaries. But not only that, it also works with other companies that they use as funds, which will then get contract from SAPS, but the money actually goes to FTA. Now, hence we're saying when we look at the contract, because what they did was realizing that it will be too obvious when the money comes directly from SAPS to FDA, then there was a collusion between members of SAPS and officials in CETA to manipulate specs, to manipulate the procurement processes so that these contracts go to FDA. So when you look at it at the face value, you go to subsystem and say, what is the amount that went to FDA? You'll probably find that 400 million or so. But when you look at the totality of the contracts and companies affiliated with FDA and those that are doing business with FDA and FDA getting more of the amounts that come from companies, that's when you get a clear picture. And that is what we are looking at here. So we a part of what we are engaged with to also assist police management, it's finding ways to have these contracts terminated, and this is the process that we're engaged in. Because it cannot be that you have a situation where a company threatens a state security agency like SAPS to say, you pay up or I switch off the system, you won't operate. How can, as a country, we outsource issues of national security like this to a private individual? How do we do that?
Because the dilemma is, what was then the bid process and the bid requirements, but also the service level agreement. How can you enter into a service level agreement with a in a high security environment and there's no fallback position for the procurement institution? So it's a huge risk, but we will definitely look at that in April. Yes, can continue.
Exactly, Chairperson, and that is the issue that we're raising here, to say how is that possible? You know, SAPS need to answer to these issues. And here's another issue that came up also at Scope. When the CEO of CETA says to FDA and Titi, I'm going to stop paying you, because from the previous appearance at Scope said, but why are you continuing to pay these people, CETA? And he says, no, I'm going to stop paying you. You've got senior police officials who threaten CETA that if you don't pay cheating and FDA, we'll stop paying you. Now, this is a state institution that is supposed to protect state funds. In fact, you expect that they will support CETA in not paying these people to make sure that we do this investigation and complete investigation, see this contract was stopped. We have, our investigations have revealed that these contracts were corrupted. Procurement processes were not followed. In all of them, they were not followed. You have a situation where a contract is advertised. Other bidders, they bid. Sometimes FDA will bid, sometimes it won't bid. And after the bids have come in, and then they look at what other service providers are saying, and then they will then cancel the bid and then advertise the bid again. When they advertise it again, it now favors FDA. We have that evidence.
Sure.
So it cannot be that it's not something that we are just creating. It's there, you know. So the procurement in the SAP, at least on all those contracts that we're looking at, it's fraught with corruption. That one is clear. Because of our capacity, we cannot even start going to look at other contracts. Maybe at some point we'll do that. We've already got information about others that are same way, you know, in terms of corruption. So we will go to that, but we have to finish these ones first and deal with them. Honorable Conor Ballard asked about the whistleblower. I think the ED has answered that, but we received this case. I received it in 2016 March, but nothing happened with that investigation until we came back. And the stories that there was no case and so forth, and we now know that there was in fact a case. People are appearing in court. With regard to KGB, you know, the issue of KGB, I've submitted a statement when we did a bail application, because we got informers from SAPS who told us, you know, what is happening. I mean, this is the person that our informants say he has been bragging that he's protected by police management, he's protected at a political level. So that is the kind of person we're dealing with. Now, KGB, it's sentenced in 96. He appeals. His appeal is handed down, is dismissed in 98. He does not hand himself over to the authorities to start his sentence, his 10-year sentence. Only in 2015 he's arrested on another a robbery matter in Sasolburg. And then only then it is discovered that this person is supposed to be in jail. But this person is now an active police officer. Now, as you understand the police processes, you can't be in the police without being vetted. So, obviously, they should have picked up at the time when he got in the police that this person has got a criminal record or he has been convicted of a crime. That never happened. But be that as it may, when he commits this crime, he's on parole. When he commits this crime that we've arrested him on. Now, here's what is funny. He gets parole. After he gets parole, he's re-enlisted in the police. How can the police, who knew, because they dismissed him in 2013. So they can't say they did not know that this person is a criminal, is a convicted criminal. But in 2016, they still re-enlist him into the police. Now, here's what's funny. We say to the police, we want a file. His personal file. That's got nothing to do with state security. We want his personal file because we want to know how he got re-enlisted. We have information, by the way, from our informants, how he got re-enlisted and who sanctioned his re-enlistment. But for us to prove that, we must get the file from the police so that we were able to prove who did the re-enlistment and be able to prefer charges against those that did that, because that's criminal. Now, that file is not coming through. It's part of these issues of declassification. The answer we get is that it's classified. We can get the information. We are not asking anything relating to the security of the state. We are asking that this man was re-enlisted, there's his personal file in crime intelligence relating to his re-enlistment. We want that. What's so difficult in getting us that? So these are the concerns that we have to say. Now, classification is being used to protect criminality in the SAPS. That's what it is. And hence we are saying, unless as Parliament we make sure that we deal with this issue, then unfortunately it's going to be difficult for us to investigate crime in crime intelligence, you know, because the Mudluli matter has been going on for years. In fact, the prosecutors have decided to prosecute on the matter. The matter is not going to court. Why? Because documents are classified. The prosecutors cannot take classified documents to court. So all what needs to happen is for the SAPS to declassify the documents, and then the matter goes to court. Simple as that. It's got nothing to do with national security. But police are refusing to classify. So, this, Chairperson, it's a serious issue. The Inspector General of Intelligence, which we now work with, cannot declassify. Hence, we're saying also the act relating to that. Because if maybe in terms of his act as the person who oversees this institution was able to say, based on the documents that I have seen, there is nothing of national security, I can declassify this and hand over to IPED, then it will be better. But he can also do that. The only person who can declassify is the author of the document and the National Commissioner of the Police or his delegate, the person in delegate. So that is the issue here.
Sorry to intervene, Mr. Soko. I saw the hand of Honourable Bailey, but I'm going to intervene. We're going to take a 10-minute tea break. Honourable members, also welcome to Judge Khomo and to Mr. Apia from the Civilian Secretariat. You're very much welcome. 10 minutes, members, and then we'll come back for the further responses. Thank you very much.